Welcome to Adventures in Concrete. This is a real-time radio show, so as I said before we went on air, please make yourselves comfortable and at home here. Move around, spread out, listen in your own space, get comfy and stay tuned. never here. I'm never slow. I'm never looking up. I can be here. I can be slow. I can look up. The ants are here. Moving to grow, to feel, to listen, to panic, to pause. Gardening growth, nourishing growth. A carpet that a million ants are tidying. Those are my words written during Sean Roy Parker's workshop this morning at the amazing Lörhalle Fabriken in rural Vårgårda, Swedish accent here, in deepest of Sweden. Thank you so much for Rose Brander and Pass for hosting this episode of Adventures in Concrete. The first track we heard there at the start of the show was Scottish composer, educator and pioneer of musique concrète or concrete music, Janet Beat. Musique concrète is a term cemented in the 1940s by Paris-based engineer, composer and sonic experimentalist Pierre Schaeffer, defined as music which uses recorded sound as source material rather than musical instruments. Musique concrète grew out of an experimental environment as recording equipment slowly became more commonplace, and it's called the ancestor of today's electronic music. After that, we heard Daphne Oram with the Metallic episode, another musique concrète pioneer. Both Daphne and Janet are a vital part of an electronic music history of visionary women whose radical experimentations with machines redefined and continue to redefine the boundaries of music, including Clara Rockmore, Bebe Baron, Pauline Oliveros, Delia Derbyshire, Marianne Amiche and Suzanne Ciani, and many more. Women who were at the centre of the technical development of electronic music and behind some of the world's leading music studios, but who are also so often left out of electronic music history. Women who persevered in a concretized male-dominated structure which claimed that technology was no job for a woman. In the 1970s, Janet initiated the electronic and recording studios at the RSAMD, now the Royal Scottish Conservatoire, and she started the first course in electronic music at Worcester University in the UK. She continued to crack the homogenised structures in music production which had excluded her, and in 2019 she was awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award from Scottish Women Inventing Music due to her work in advancing electronic music. Daphne Oram began her career in radio broadcasting in the 1940s in the UK. She was one of the first British composers to produce electronic sound and was a co-founder of the BBC Radio Workshop. Radiophonic Workshop. Daphne was central to the development of the British electronic music scene, scoring and producing electronic music for film, radio, TV, adverts, as well as her own music compositions. She set up the Oramix Studio for Electronic Composition and was the inventor of Oramix, a means of synthesizing sound by drawing waveforms, pitches, volume envelopes, and other properties on tape. Janet Beat and Daphne Oram, both pioneers in concrete. I'm Eva Rosen. We met earlier, but now you're tuned in to Adventures in Concrete. For the last 4 years, I've been adventuring through concrete as director of a concrete and brick building in Bergen on the west coast of Norway, Bergenshut. It was a former butter, margarine and later meat production factory built in 1905. And this year we celebrate 120 years of the building. That's where the name comes from. Skjøt means meat. Since 2010, the building has developed as one of Norway's largest independent non-profit music production centres. And we aim to cultivate the sustainable and equitable development of the Norwegian cultural industry, both on stage and behind the scenes. Bergenshut has 28 permanent sound studios, 110 tenants, two flexible and accessible concert venues, and Norway's only technical training programme that works to train more women, non-binary and transgender sound technicians. And I will talk a bit about that later in the show. This old building, much like the one we're sitting in right now, was never built for this kind of cultural activity or accessibility. And it is also a challenge in construction, repair, strengthening, reinforcing, cleaning, fixing, maintenance. As my ventilation engineer says, things in this building were built for cold, dead, inanimate bodies, such as margarine and meat. So how do we now make this building work for warm, living bodies? As well as physical concrete, this last 5 years has been an adventure in challenging concretized societal and cultural structures, which unknowingly or knowingly maintain exclusive, inaccessible, discriminatory systems. So concretized, they become the norm, the unnoticed, and the apparently, for those who uphold these structures, unchangeable. It has been Adventures in Concrete. Like Sara Ahmed says in her 2014 essay, Hard, the brick, or in my case, concrete, wall is what you come up against when you are involved in the practical project of opening worlds to bodies that have historically been excluded from those worlds. An organization can be a world, a neighborhood, a street, a home, a nation, or in my case, a 120-year-old building. Diversity workers often say it's like banging your head against a brick wall. I believe it's important to describe what this work, what this banging your head against a brick wall feels like. Audre Lorde taught me this, to describe how it feels to come up against a world. I think from describing what this work feels like, we learn not only about diversity workers, but about the worlds we are working to transform. Diversity work is hard work. In physics, hardness refers to the resistance of materials to change under force. That's such a good description of an institutional brick wall. We have to force, become forceful, apply more force, because the work and the wall is hard. A wall is hard. It's made of hard matter. The wall is made like this for a reason. It has to keep standing to keep things standing. Walls are useful borders. They stand up, they keep out, they keep in. Hardness is a coming up against things. Hardness has a history, or hardness is history. History becomes concrete. Diversity work requires world making, finding spaces to withdraw into, places that are less hard to inhabit. In these fragments, in these cracks, those pieces that we have shattered, we find each other. In this radio show, we're going to meet some others who are adventuring through concrete and infrastructure. We're also going to need quite a lot of water. And that's what happens in these concrete buildings, full of dust and many other things. Thank you. Breaking concrete ceilings, challenging concretized societal structures, evoking new ways of organizing. Organizing, the dust is still there. And building their own world of revolutionary change. You're all welcome to call in. Thank you, the water has arrived. You're welcome to call in to the radio show at any time. All questions and experiences are welcome.
Tu souris. Mais la vérité est amère. Ta mère. Tu souris, mais la vérité est amère.
That was The Bitter Truth by Valentina Magaletti and Fanny Chiarello. Recorded and produced in 2022 by Valentina Magaletti. and released on their all-female label Permanent Draft. Permanent Draft recently published the book Basta Now, Women, Trans and Non-Binary in Experimental Music. Basta means enough now. Enough of historical structures which exclude so many pioneering musicians who have shaped our musical history and continue to do so. Basta Now is a huge, yet, as the editors admit, not definitive, overview of 2,371 women, non-binary and trans in the global experimental sound and music scene. Fanny and Valentina say, after having spent 40 years exploring vastly different musical landscapes from Baroque to noise and free jazz, after having noticed the dizzying underrepresentation, if not the total absence of women in each of these genres, after having heard men talk about the best records of all time for decades with no women in sight, we began to make a list of women, non-binary, trans and female assigned at birth in experimental music whose work interested us. We started in 2017 and every day we add new names. This book will inevitably become outdated, but now that's our job to maintain this work, sustain the change and renew the revolution. We'll play one more from their album now. This is Migraine. Was Migraine by Valentina Magaletti and Fanny Chiarello. As Miela Lederman-Ukeles says in her manifesto for maintenance art that she wrote in 1969, maintenance is a drag and it takes all the fucking time. Maybe we have to beep that bit out afterwards in the recording. but it also sustains change, nourishes progress, and gets us to think about how to build structures to maintain the revolution after the celebration of change. After the revolution, who's going to pick up the garbage on Monday morning and the next morning and the next? Miele's work with maintenance in her art practice focused on highlighting overlooked aspects of social production, questioning the hierarchies of different forms of work, especially housework and low-wage labour like cleaning, maintenance work, trash collection, street cleaning. Who does these? How are they valued? And with what consequences? Before we get into that, we'll have a bit more music. This is Brooklyn-based musician and producer Barry Lindsay, simply known as Barry. This is her 2022 single, Concrete, taken from her album, Barbara. That was Barry with her 2022 single, Concrete. She says the song is about taking the time and energy to figure out who you are, learning to take up space and be yourself. My friends and fellow maintenance nerds, Ross Jardine and Andrea Franke, have said that maintenance work is like a bump in the road. You only notice that it's there, that it's a job, that it's vital as everything functioning when it goes wrong. In their essay, Bureaucracy's Labour, for Pass magazine, shout out, in 2017, they quote Nigel Thrift and Stephen Graham describing infrastructure systems as being physically and metaphorically veiled beneath the surface of urban life, only made visible by the sudden absence of infrastructural flow. The usual smoothness of the concrete road's maintained surface is only made present the moment we hit a pothole. So what happens when we transform that thinking to notice and value maintenance as vital to transforming our buildings, societies, localities, communities, coalitions? When we revalue maintenance work and the workers who do it as crucial and central to our world functioning and developing, what effect does that have on how we are actually able to think and do transformative work for equity, inclusion and change? The last few years at Bag & Schutt, I've been working on how to soften, open and transform its rigid concrete structure. When I arrived, the building was in such urgent need of repair. No fire alarm, indoor waterfalls, 170 electrical faults. But rather than rushing through this work to get to the interesting stuff of curating programs and projects or putting the repair on the to-do list, which is actually the never going to happen to-do list, I decided to embrace that repair and maintenance as something revolutionary, transformational, and to celebrate this work that usually goes uncelebrated and the workers who do this transformational work. The former factory was never built for accessibility, but when I started the job in 2020, everyone thought the building was fully accessible because there was a ramp at the front of the building. No one had ever thought to check what happened when you get up the ramp as a wheelchair user. And actually, you couldn't go to the toilet, you couldn't access the second floor concert venue, you couldn't go to the bar to get a drink. And then, of course, came the comment from someone on my board, but wheelchair users don't come to things here anyway. Of course not. So one of the first things I did was to change the door and the door frame of our largest toilet to be 90 centimetres wide and wide enough for wheelchairs. It cost 10,000 Norwegian kroner to change the door, about £1,000. And after all that, it just looks the same. It's just a door, but 20 centimetres wider. No one has ever commented on how great the door looks or even that it actually even changed size and shape. But now we have a fully equipped accessible toilet. This invisible adaptation to our toilet door literally transformed our accessibility and who can visit us. And this got me thinking about how can we use every tiny structural change and investment to make an impact in the world? What is the full potential of the changes we make, however small or invisible or insignificant or uncelebrated they may seem? When we opened our bar in 2022, we suddenly had to invest in buying 1,000 wine glasses, not a decision you have to take every day. With advice from the Blind Association, we bought 1,000 pink coloured glass tumblers. Coloured glass gives better contrast for people with visual impairment than clear glass, and tumblers with ridges are easier to grasp than smooth-walled glasses. The glasses are also made from a thick safety glass, which means they're less likely to break if they're dropped or less likely to become a hazard when broken. Now we use all of these for our water, beer, cocktails, wine. They don't scream accessible wine glass. There's no flashing sign that says accessibility here if you drink from this glass. But for those people who struggle with concrete barriers in society every day, these small investments in changing the world make a huge difference. On that note, let's refill our glasses and hear a bit more music. This time we're going to listen to A Call from the Eaves by Marta Saloni and Floating Points. It was also released in 2022. That was a snippet of Call from the Eaves by Marta Saloni and Floating Points. All proceeds from the sale of this track go directly to the Free Youth Orchestra, which is run by Marta, and Melly volunteers, set up in the memory of Marta's collaborator, the musician Tom Raleen, who sadly passed away a few years ago. Free Youth Orchestra believe music, playing music and learning music should be free for all kids, no matter their socio-economic background. They encourage learning through play and experimentation, free self-expression and a collective exploration of sound as an orchestra using conventional and non-conventional orchestral instruments, such as synthesizers, pedals, tapes, electric guitars, bass and more. Concrete is a composite material composed of aggregate, bound together with a fluid cement that cures to a solid over time. It is the second most used substance after water, the most widely used building material, and the most manufactured material in the world. Concrete is a polysemic word, a word that has multiple meanings. In the case of concrete, it means a building material, a description meaning something definite, and to form or solidify something. When we start to make small changes in how and what we transform, when we reprioritize building and maintenance work as transformational, creative, and curatorial, when we consider our work in institutions as creating new worlds with new walls and new structures, we start to create new templates for more inclusive, equitable, and revolutionary worlds that aren't full of dust. It's the concrete. Worlds that are strong and supportive, as well as constantly open to feedback, change, learning, and dissolving into something new again. Structures which can become solid, but are always living and breathing and absorbing and coughing like concrete. When we installed the new elevator at Bargenschut in 2023, we had a huge party. It was a chance to celebrate not only the new elevator, which was a huge infrastructural feat and something I never thought I would do in my career as an artist and a curator, but installing the elevator was also a chance to mark the transformational and safe step-free accessibility the elevator now gives us to our second floor venue. We called the elevator Knut after the engineer who had taken care of our previous elevator and had actually installed it for the last 40 years. Knut had spent his career as an elevator engineer always being in the way. When he was visible, it meant something was wrong, something broken. He had to work as fast as possible to become invisible and get out of the way again. The elevator party was a way to make Knut and his fellow elevator engineers visible and celebrate this maintenance work. I asked these same questions when we installed our new sound system a few years ago. How can we use this huge investment in a sound system to not just become another concert venue, but to change the world? It's not just another elevator, but it's a chance to celebrate accessibility and the workers who make it happen. In our campaigns for change, we often reinforce some structures while trying to challenge others. What does it mean to aim for 50-50 gender equality in our music festivals and concert lineups when women using wheelchairs cannot get on stage or even into our buildings, and women of colour are not represented in the lineup at all? When the 50-50 reinforces that gender binary, it exists only in a binary. What does it mean to focus on equality on stage when women, non-binary, transgender people only represent 7% of those actually doing the tech behind the scenes as sound and light technicians? What does it mean when we aspire to the calculations of universal access but do not listen to the lived experiences for those who cannot fit into these dimensions? In Norway in 2021, it was reported that a third of sound technicians had left the field during COVID, as festivals and concerts were cancelled and the precarity of the music industry reliant on freelance workers collapsed. But the report also found that 93% of technicians in Norway are cis male. There is almost no representation in the industry of non-white or disabled people. There is no formal sound engineering education in Norway, so the whole system goes around on who you know, and the same circles include and exclude the same people. It is a structure which is so informal, it has been concretized without ever being questioned. The image of the sound guy at the sound desk becomes an image imprinted in our vision of this job and who can do it, like a footprint in fresh concrete. So when we installed the sound system, we started to use it as a training ground to empower more women, non-binary and trans people as sound technicians. How can we use this sound system to do something more than just put the same people on stage and employ the same people off stage? Since 2021, we've trained almost 300 people in sound engineering in our training program, which is called GRIP. And 93% of trainees have been women, non-binary, transgender. And now we've doubled the number of women and non-binary technicians working in Bergen, proving that these women, non-binary and trans people do, of course, want to work with technology, like Daphne and Janet, who we heard at the start of the show, and they are freaking awesome at it. This next track is a homage to those trainees and everyone making shapes and careers in an industry that was never open or accessible to them, and to their guts, resilience and inspiration to stay with the trouble, as Donna Haraway says, and become role models for the next ones. This is a track from Lebanese artist. She's called Yara Asma, and this is her track from Gardens in the City We Keep Alive, released in 2023. Snippet from Yara Asma and from Gardens in the City We Keep Alive. Yara is a Lebanese musician and video artist based in Beirut, and she just released her third album, Stuttering Music. During the pandemic, she turned to home taping, using broken instruments, field recordings, and deconstructed music boxes to sculpt these enchanting lo-fi compositions. Stuttering Music was born out of improvised performances broadcast on Palestine's Radio Al-Hara, as her grandmother's accordion takes center stage in this album. It drones, drifting and mutating, processed and thickened with electroacoustic effects. The good thing about radio is usually no one can see you when you're streaming liquids out of your face. So for all of you listening at home afterwards, there's some liquids flowing in this concrete show. A few years ago, I worked in a major cultural organization, and after a while, I noticed that everyone who was not permanently contracted was not included in the exhibition credits, which meant the cleaners, ticket sellers, bar staff, exhibition invigilators, tour guides were invisibilized from both the communication of the exhibition and the future history of it. Their invisibility was so concretized, it also reinforced how we value this kind of work. My aim during that year I worked there was to try to get everyone who worked there listed on the exhibition credits, not only the permanent full-time staff, but everyone whose labour contributed to maintaining the organisation. And then the director asked me, wouldn't it be embarrassing to put the job title cleaner after that worker's name? And there it was. For as long as this maintenance and cleaning work is seen as embarrassing, we have a long way to go to really transform our institutions and our concretized biases and value judgments. In 2016, Jasmine Babers, the Aspen Institute Peace First Fellow, came up with the term concrete ceiling as a way to describe the significantly tougher hurdle that women of colour face in reaching elevated success in their careers. In her essay for Women of Colour, The Glass Ceiling is Actually Made of Concrete, she describes how concrete is not only difficult to break, but women of colour are unable to see through it. The lack of role models, marketing, career paths to these jobs. Never seeing themselves represented in these jobs. And that means that that which cannot be seen remains hidden and unattainable. Jasmine said, this new term of the concrete ceiling had to be created simply because the experiences of white women and women of colour are extremely different, but too often ignored. The good news is that even concrete can be cracked, but it won't be easy. Our biggest sledgehammer is making sure that women of colour have a voice. My suggestion is that we break through barriers together, the glass ceiling and any other ceiling that gets in our way. We cannot talk about concrete, maintenance, revolution, infrastructure here without acknowledging and actively condemning the ongoing genocide against people, buildings, infrastructure, monuments, communities, history in Gaza and Palestine right now. So let's continue now with this track, Miwiz, by British Lebanese artist Salia. This is the Dami Falastini edit. And Dami Falastini is an ode to the Palestinian resistance in the face of Israeli military occupation. Salia says, play it loud, play it proud, and free Palestine.
Thank you.
was a clip from Salia with Me Wiz. Salia is a music producer and DJ, blending a cappellas, UK bass, popular Arabic classics and electronic music. She says on her Bandcamp page that she is continuously giving back to the community by working behind the scenes, supporting grassroots organisations and teaching DJ workshops. I came across Salia listening to an inspirational woman, Salma El-Sharmi, a Palestinian-Austrian woman living and working in Berlin as an artist manager and also managing Salia. Salma hosts a radio show on Refuge Radio worldwide called Sonic Uprising, the unyielding spirit of Palestinian hip-hop. She co-founded Offbeat Coalition as a platform to create more spaces, both sonic and beyond, for creative output and social assembly, to provide greater accessibility and more tools to safeguard the independence of artistic expression and freedom of resistance. Salma was speaking at a roundtable in 2023 in Berlin called How Do We Center Inclusivity and Equity in Our Creative Process?, taking place in a moment of increasing creative censorship in Berlin, still ongoing, against individuals and institutions speaking up against genocide in Palestine. Salma says, we collectively hold power to disrupt systems. Let's exercise it. If not now, when? Let's keep educating ourselves and showing up for Palestine, Gaza, Sudan, Tigray, Congo, Ukraine, Lebanon, and beyond. Artist Nina Sinelli dives into a deep fascination of concrete. Just stop this track in the background. In her project, The Erosion of Silicon Beach. Nina is an artist and musician living on Stola, Tonga, Gwich and Chumash land that is often referred to as Los Angeles. The Erosion of Silicon Beach is a hypertextual research project analysing social and political issues in an area of Los Angeles going through rapid change due to the influx of tech companies. The whole project is available online in 19 chapters. We'll just hear a bit of it today. A sort of poetic lens for linking discourses on indigenous resistance, racial justice, ecology, urbanism, militarism, policing, and gentrification. Like many limited resources on this planet, sand is being removed from ecosystems for construction, oil drilling, land building, much faster than it can be replenished. To build these cities of concrete, asphalt and glass, humans are pulling sand out of the ground in exponentially increasing amounts. The overwhelming bulk of it goes to make concrete, by far the world's most important building material. In a typical year, according to the United Nations Environment Programme, the world uses enough concrete to build a wall 88 feet high and 88 feet wide right around the equator every year. A feedback loop emerges. Government-guaranteed property insurance leads to irresponsible real estate growth and justifies massive storm barrier projects that exacerbate ecological havoc. And all of this concrete and glass, all of this dredging, pumping and filling rests upon one sinking conundrum. Around the world, we are running out of sand. Recycling concrete is possible, but has so far been deemed cost prohibitive, at least as long as there's still access to cheaper sand reserves and we can just keep taking it. On a geological timescale, everything solid will eventually weather or erode. How long until all of this concrete returns to sand? Concrete is very strong and durable under compression, but will fall apart easily under tensile stress. Concrete structures from Roman antiquity have lasted for thousands of years, but unfortunately this will not be the case for most modern concrete construction, like Bargenschutt and probably at Lührhaller Fabriken as well. In order to achieve the incredible versatility of concrete building today, the formula used by the Romans must be reinforced with steel rebars. These steel bars provide tensile strength that and the unreinforced concrete like the Romans used lacks, but also has a critical weakness. When embedded in concrete, steel is hidden but active. Moisture entering through thousands of tiny cracks creates an electrochemical reaction. One end of the rebar becomes an anode and the other a cathode, forming a sort of battery that powers the transformation of iron into rust. Rust can expand the rebar up to 4 times its size, enlarging cracks and forcing the concrete to fracture apart in a process called spalling, or concrete cancer. In this way, even concretized sand will eventually succumb to its original agitator, water. The Pantheon still stands precisely because it is made of unreinforced concrete, relying instead on its compressive design for strength. But ancient designs could never suit the myriad applications that we expect and demand from concrete today. Roman concrete was never expected to scrape the sky or suspend cars in the air for miles on end. Even as sand makes possible the solid world we know today, its colloquial identity as a building material is defined by precarity. I had this lump of concrete, and somewhere inside it was a diamond. But getting into the lump of concrete, it took years. For whatever reason, I started reading pacifist literature, and I was also involved in anti-war protests, ban the bomb, and all of that. I had been a pacifist activist of sorts for a long time, but I realized I didn't know much about my cause. So I put myself through a sort of course, reading that literature, and that led me to utopianism. At some point, it occurred to me that nobody had written an anarchist utopia. We had socialist utopias and dystopias and all the rest, but an anarchist utopia, that would be fun. That last paragraph was from Ursula K. Le Guin in the Paris Review in 2013, and that's thanks to Ilik, who pointed me to that quote a few years ago. He has a regular radio show, also on Refuge Radio in Berlin, called The Concrete Listening Show, that synthesizes words spoken by musicians and artists like Ursula K. Le Guin, intuitively connected through jazz, soul, house, electronic, experimental, and improvised-based music. And you can find both Elix and Salma's shows on Refuge Radio worldwide. This final track is from Manal, a Moroccan pop singer-songwriter. Manal was due to play in Bergen last year at the International Music Festival, but she had to cancel due to threats to her safety because of her public support for the people of Palestine and Gaza. When she had to cancel to protect her own safety, the amazing grassroots organization in Bergen, Papillon, who worked to lift up multicultural youth, released this statement. Manal is not just an artist. She is a voice for girls and women from different cultures. We are inspired by women like Manal and her dedication to challenging society's norms and structures. We remain dedicated to empowering one another, cultivating the resilience necessary to navigate the ever-evolving challenges of today's world. Together, we can break structures, support, and uplift each other. This has been Adventures in Concrete. Thank you so much to Rose, Branda and Pass magazine and Lieux Hallefabriken for having me here. And I should say that Lieux Hallefabriken have a fantastic ramp. It's such a treat to come to an old factory and see the ramp in place. And the concrete coughing has nothing to do with the hospitality. That's just, that's the way of the concrete. This is Manal with Maboula, and thank you for listening.
يا فازي طي طي جريتك ما هي سالكه.